9/11 Dreads, episode 28. Hey, as the weather gets nice, there's nothing your buddy Otis B. Dreads likes to do better than go find some haunted hospitals or haunted prisons or any old broke-down haunted place. Yes, your buddy, your pal Otis B. Dreads is a ghost hunter. I got two places that should be on your bucket list. One I've been to and one that I am dying to go to. All pun intended. Let's get it started. Welcome once again back in the insane asylum. I am Otis B. Dreads. This is the Night of the Living Dreads podcast, the podcast that talks all and anything horror. Before we get into this week's episode, I gotta, of course, give out some horror love. Gorehounds of Horror on Facebook. Great. I can't say enough about these guys. Check them out. They have a closed group as well as a non-closed group. So be sure to, if you're on the book, check out Gorehounds of Horror as well as Misfit Horror Fiend Club. This is another great bunch of horror fanatics. Be sure to check them out. Another one as well, After Dark. If you just can't get enough horror on Facebook, you may have some resources now. After Dark on Facebook. And then the one non-horror group that I like to give some love to, the Cannabis Arcade. Cannabis Arcade, spelled with a K, the cannabis, that is. Just a funny damn group, man. That's all I can say. You get a lot of dark humor. You get a lot of humor. You get a lot of talk about our sweet, sweet girl, Mary Jane. And, of course, Night of the Living Dreads, Dreads with no A. We are also over there on Facebook as well as Night of the Living Dreads. .com, where you can check out this episode as well as the other 27 train wrecks that we have done in the past. So let's get right into this. You know, the weather is getting nice, and I know a lot of people, you know, the weather gets nice, they want to go to beaches, they take a little vacation, you know, do that summer thing, that spring thing, getting out there and, you know, going and just, you know, doing some family things, and that's great. I'm not shitting on that at all. But what your buddy, Otis B. Dreads, likes to do with his merry band of degenerates... we like to go ghost hunting, and we like to find old haunted, suspected haunted places and see if we can experience anything for ourselves. Now, it's been about a year since I have been to any place like this. The last time I went was a place in Newcastle, Pennsylvania, a place called Hillview Manor. And this is the one place that I think if you are into these kind of things and you like to get out and do some spooky, you know, exploring and ghost hunting or whatnot, this is one place I think you should check out. And I have another one that I have not checked out that we're going to talk about, that being Waverly Hills Sanatorium down in Louisville area, Kentucky. And I have not been there. But as I mentioned, I am dying to go there. All pun intended. And so Hillview is, well, you know, actually what I'm going to do is I'm going to go right to their website. HauntedHillviewManor.com is their website. And I'm just going to read a little bit about some of the brief history of Hillview. Hillview Manor was known as the Lawrence County Home for the Aged, also known as the Poor House or Poor Farm, and housed the county's mentally ill, severely destitute, and elderly residents that didn't have any known family. It was built to replace the new aging or the aging Newcastle City Home and consolidated various small institutions around the county. The facility opened its doors on Tuesday, October 19th, 1926. That day, Perry D. Snyder and his wife, Mary A. Snyder, whom were first elected in March of 1913 to serve in respective posts of the Newcastle City Home. He took up residence in the Lawrence County Home for the Aged. Along with Mr. and Mrs. Snyder, their two children, about 12 staff members, and the first 20 inmates left the old city home and also took up residence in the Lawrence County home. A young boy was among these first 20 inmates, although the home did not generally take children. In June of 1944, county welfare officials and the Snyders, now in their late 70s, were accused of incompetency at the home. During the hearing, the Snyders were retired with pensions but permitted to stay at the home. So they started it and then became residents. By late August, the Snyders were given 3 weeks to vacate the premises. They were staying there. They were living in this place while, you know, pretty much running it. The Snyders' run of over 30 years of service to the community had ended, and Mance B. Hoag, the longtime director of the welfare department, took over operations at the home. The home continued to operate for many years, and in the latter half of the 1960s was remodeled and slowly changed into a skilled nursing center while under supervision of director Clarence E. Covert. In 1970, the home was facing severe overcrowding issues, and Covert became bitter about the lack of county support, and he resigned in 1973, January. In December of 1974, the county decided to add a new section, which is now known as the North Wing, and remodeled some of the existing floors. The new three-story addition included the additional basement floor, A new three-story addition, including an additional basement floor, was to be built. This would allow the home to accommodate another 30 or more residents. A new kitchen and dining room and other occupational rooms were included in the construction. The North Wing opened in the mid-1977, and after a contest, to find a more suitable name for the Lawrence County Home for the Aged, it was renamed as Hillview Manor on March 22nd, 1977. Hillview Manor closed its doors permanently for residency, that is, in 2004 due to financial constraints. Although it seems to sit quiet on the top of a grassy hill above Route 65, evidence of its history remains active. Now, this is a place that, again, that I visited. We did an overnight investigation. We had, I'm going to say, roughly about seven, just under 10 people, I believe. We had a nice little group, six, seven people. And we split up a lot of times. We had people coming from out of state come in and check this place out. And I want to play you a I'm a skeptic before I get into this, because I do have a kind of a rough audio, but very clearly you can hear a female's voice throwing out an F-bomb out of nowhere. I am a skeptic. I go into these places very skeptical. I will use all, possible you know, reasoning that I have to disprove what I, you know, had experienced. Certain things, you know, is there wind causing doors or movement or what? You know, I go through the whole rundown to take and try and disprove it. And if I can disprove it, then it's, you know, the unexplained. I haven't been able to explain it and use different methods like that. There were some things that, and overall, I have to say, overall, there wasn't a lot of activity that we picked up. There were a few selected incidences that there was some of our members of the group, one namely a dear friend of mine, Dominic, who was there. He recorded the audio that you're going to hear here in 1 second. He picked up a few things. There were a few random things that were picked up. And as a lot of these places do, when you go to, you know, someplace like maybe Hillview or Waverly Hills or any of the places that offer overnight tours, the owners are the ones running it. They really want to hear this stuff because, you know, I think they kind of make record of this. And a lot of the things that we heard were also things that past people, past investigators and whatnot have heard as well. So just to put it out there, I am a skeptic. It's not like I'm putting this out there like you have to believe this, but there are some things that we couldn't explain. This being one, as I mentioned, we had a friend come out from out of state, and it was probably, I'm going to guess, right, between 9 and 10. They give us an hour and a half tour of the place about 7 o'clock, and then we're on our own. They go down in a secluded room and sleep or whatever, and you're free to roam the place and do your investigations. Well, it was around, like I said, between 9 and 10, and our friend from out of state, he was, you know, just about there, so myself and my wife were in the little, they have a home base, you can call it, a little room where you can charge, you can set things up, you can make coffee, and, you know, snacks, whatever. And we were waiting there, well, for our friend. While we were there, my friend Dominic and another one of the members of our group were off exploring. And they, I want to say, I'm trying to remember exactly where he said this was. I believe it was in a dining area of some sort. And, well, I'll let you hear for yourself this little clip because it's a little, we couldn't explain it. Again, there were two males there in the room. When the audio starts out, and again, it's a rough audio. We haven't been able to, get it, you know, transfer our information and our videos and whatnot back and forth due to, you know, technical issues and whatnot. And, well, life. And I'm a procrastinator, so. But Dominic did get this. He kind of recorded it on his phone, a video of what he got. And I want to play you that audio. First thing you're going to hear is his spirit box. And about 7-8 seconds into the noise you hear is the spirit box. About 7-8 seconds into it, you hear, to me, and it sounds very clear, and again, there was only two people in the room, both of them male, you hear very clear a woman or a girl's voice simply say, "Fuck." That was it. Now, another part of this video, which you do not hear on this, is while the spirit box was running, Dominic was hearing some sort of music. He at first said that it kind of sounded like an ice cream truck. But again, he said looking back, it sounded more almost like a jewelry box, you know, one of the little music box kind of things. A music box, not a jewelry box, a music box, that kind of music. So I'm going to let you hear for yourself Again, this is a good friend of mine who recorded this. I was not in the room. It was him and one of our other members of the group, investigators. So here it is for yourself, a little potty mouth spirit. Let me know what you think. It seemed pretty clear to me, and again, I'm a skeptic. So, there was nothing there to really come right out and say, well, it could have been this, it could have been that. It was clearly a girl's voice dropping an F-bomb. This happened once again. With the friend, our friend Blaine, who had come out from Maryland. Now, Hillview is, again, in Pennsylvania, Newcastle, and he was coming out from Maryland, and him and Dominic also caught something in another room. I don't have that audio for you, but hope to get some of the audio and everything that we looked into and that we recorded, sifted through. This is one that you're really going to want, to go and check out. The people there are very, very friendly, very nice, very knowledgeable of the history of the place. And, well, I came across this. It apparently, where did I lose it? Okay, here we go. They have a, they're doing a HillCon, which is a paranormal convention, and this is going to be going on September 21st. You can, again, check out all this information at hauntedhillviewmanor.com. And this is the first that I've seen of this. I don't know if they do this all the time. But it's from 11 a.m. again on the 21st of September, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Admission is just $10. There's going to have speeches. There's going to be presentations. It is both for skeptics and, believers. If you're new to it, hey, this is for you too. The seasoned investigator as well as the skeptic. They do have special events. You can, get an hour tour of the place with some history there. That's going to be $20 a person, but you can also do an investigation, which will be held from about 9 p.m. to 5 a.m., and that is $65 a person, which isn't all that bad, if you ask me. This could be a fun time. I think Dominic and myself we are definitely interested in this, and we will probably be there. So if you are in the Pennsylvania or surrounding areas, states, I should say, then we might see each other out there. Who knows? But again, September 21st, HillCon convention at Hillview Manor, haunted HillviewManor.com. All right. I want to take and talk now about a place that is very high up on my bucket list of haunted places to go. And that being Waverly Hills Sanatorium. Now, this place is, this place... Watching some of the videos and some audio that has been taken by other investigators, and again, I'm very skeptic I'm a very skeptical person when I go into it, even though I have had experiences myself with things that I couldn't explain that I could very easily write off as supernatural, paranormal, whatever. But Waverly Hills is one of the that for the most part, a lot of the evidence. And when I watch videos, I'll be like, I'm thinking in my head, all right, now how could that be misconstrued as a shadow person? How could that, you know, is somebody seeing something that they want to see, therefore they believe so much that all of a sudden it kind of appears, almost as if your mind's playing tricks on you. You want to believe it so much that you actually, you know, you kind of think you see this or think you see that. Well, that's not so much the case with some of the videos that I have seen and some of the evidence that's been presented out of Waverly Hills. A lot of it is very, very, very compelling. Before we get into some of that, and I do have a little clip that I want to play, given five of the big stories and mysteries surrounding Waverly. Before we do that, though, I'm going to give you again a brief rundown on the history of Waverly, and this again comes from their website, which is therealwaverlyhills.com. Waverly Hills Sanatorium sits on land that was originally purchased by Major Thomas H. Hayes in 1883. Major Hayes was in need of a school for his daughters to attend, so he started a one-room schoolhouse that was located on Page's Lane. He hired a woman named Lizzie Lee Harris to teach at the school. Now, Lizzie's love for the tiny school, in addition to her fondness for Scott's Waverly novels, prompted her to name the little schoolhouse Waverly School. Major Hayes liked the name and chose to name his property Waverly Hill. The Board of Tuberculosis Hospital kept the name after purchasing the land and opening a sanatorium. Originally, Waverly Hill Sanatorium was a two-story frame building with a hipped roof and half timbering. Construction on this building began in 1908 and opened for business on July 26, 1910. The building was designed to safely accommodate 40 to 50 tuberculosis patients. At the time, tuberculosis was a very serious disease. People who were afflicted with tuberculosis were isolated from the general public and placed in an area where they could rest, stay calm, and have plenty of fresh air. Sanatoriums were built on high hills surrounded by the peaceful woods to create a serene atmosphere to help patients recover. Tuberculosis was becoming an epidemic in Valley Station, Pleasant Ridge Park, and other parts of Jefferson County in Kentucky. The little TB clinic was filled with more than 140 people, and it was obvious that a much larger hospital was needed to treat those afflicted with the condition. Because tuberculosis was so extremely contagious and at epidemic proportions, those living with it could not be allowed to live and exist amongst the general population. It was not known at the time that tuberculosis was an airborne disease. Very early in the research, you know, stages of tuberculosis. Now, some may hear the name the White Plague, which was given to diseases, just numerous different diseases, in which it caused the person to become very pale, given the White Plague. It made you pale. But it was very, I think, more so associated with tuberculosis. Waverly Hills was a self-contained community. This is amazing. A city in and of itself, complete with its own zip code. This hospital had its own zip code. It had its own post office. It had its own grave site, graveyard. It had two movie theaters in it. I mean, this place, because a lot of, you know, they had to make, it was pretty much like a little city. It really was. 800,000 square feet of little city. Waverly Hills had its own post office, water treatment facility, grew its own fruits and vegetables, raised its own meat for slaughter, and maintained many of the other necessities of everyday life. Everyone at Waverly, patients, nurses, doctors, and other employees, had to say goodbye to everything they knew on the outside world. Once you went into Waverly Hills, you became a permanent resident on the Hill. So even doctors, you had to live there. And I think that was mainly because, the nurses, the doctors that took care of these patients were also, of course, very susceptible to catching this airborne disease. Oddly enough, despite the fact many patients received visits from loved ones on visiting day, when the visit was over, the visitors left Waverly and ventured back into their community. The massive collegiate Gothic-style sanatorium that you see remains standing on Waverly Hill, still to this day. It could accommodate at least 400-plus patients and was considered one of the most modern and well-equipped facilities at the time. Construction of this massive, massive hospital began in March 1924 and opened for business on October 17th, 1926. The facility served as a tuberculosis hospital until 1961, and that came to an end when finally an antibiotic and a cure for tuberculosis kind of pretty much rendered the facility obsolete. They didn't need it anymore. They did not need to take and isolate these people. They could actually cure them of their illness. In 1962, the building reopened as Woodhaven Medical Services, a geriatric facility, basically a nursing home. And it was that until 1981 when it closed its doors. Now, it was in 2002 that a husband, wife, Charlie and Tina Mattingly, I'm assuming they are husband and wife, maybe they are sisters, I don't know, brother, sister, not sisters, but Charlie and Tina Mattingly, they took and bought the property, and they, and I think the reason they bought it, and I believe they do state this, is because they wanted to, as much as they could, preserve this historic building that is rich in history, steeped in claims of paranormal activity, said to be one of the most haunted hospitals in the U.S. And I know you hear that a lot about a lot of places. This place, I think, can probably back it up, and I'm hoping to be able to experience that myself. Now, this place was five stories. The fifth story, though, was kind of a half of a floor. It wasn't really, in the entire fifth floor. It was actually up in the the roof area where they would take patients and get them fresh air and let them sit out and get some sunlight and things of that nature. So the first floor, just to give you a brief rundown, the first floor had your X-ray rooms, your administration offices, gift shops, libraries, your typical things. Some patient rooms, I think, may have been down there. Some things that they did with patients down there, but most of the patients pretty much occupied, the remaining floors. The second and third floor was your general population, those that maybe weren't too contagious, although most of them were. Fourth floor was for people who literally had a lot of money. You got special treatment up there. Each of their rooms had their own private bathrooms, whereas on the second and third floor in the general population area, they had a few bathrooms scattered amongst the floor, community bathrooms. So quite different. You got a little bit of special treatment up there. And then, again, the fifth floor, which, you know, had a lot of different, you know, odds and ends. Not too many patient rooms up there, but no less the history, as we'll get into that. Now, they came across a problem because being that tuberculosis and this white plague was at epidemic proportions in this area, as well as, you know, possibly, you know, numerous other places in the United States, there was a flood of patients looking for help with their sickness, their tuberculosis. And Waverly Hills was, you know, pretty much at the top of their game at that point. It was considered a very, you know, modern, up-to-date. This is a facility that was doing research within its, I mean, this was pretty much, I guess you could say, the state of art in tuberculosis treatment and whatnot. Although some of the treatment was, you know, kind of cruel. So people were coming from all over to attend this. Now, what they found was those that were living in Jefferson County and the surrounding counties that were locals, that were Kentuckians, there were no beds for them. So here sits this tuberculosis hospital that is pretty much filled to the gills. They said what once this place was hopping, that there were no beds available. I mean, they were just filled to the gills with patients. And at that time, a lot of these patients were from out of state. So this left locals who were sick with this white plague, this tuberculosis, it left them pretty much shit out of luck. So they came up with a solution for this, and that was you had to be a resident of Jefferson County, or the state at least, to attend and to be a patient in this facility. And a lot of people, they were flooding this place again because, you know, they were kind of leading in the research, and there wasn't really a whole lot of places where tuberculosis, being extremely contagious and an airborne type disease, there wasn't many places that were doing the things that Waverly was, and that, you know, isolating and the intense, you know, treatments and this and that, which a lot of the treatments they did were, they were just, you know, testing the waters. You know, there was a lot of hit and miss type deals, which we'll talk a little bit about. So they had to be from Jefferson County. Now I mentioned there's a few things, and I don't want to, you know, get into too much of room 502 because the video clip that I'm going to play, which is just under 10 minutes, but it gives a nice little, you know, top five type deals of the some of the occurrences there. But there was a room. Now, before I get too far, because I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, there's a movie out called Death Tunnel, and this is based on Waverly Hills. It was filmed there, and the reason they came, they have the name Death Tunnel, is because, well, there was a body chute, and what I mean by that was, the death toll, there was a lot of deaths at this time in the areas, in the Kentucky area, the Louisville, Jefferson County area. They said up to, you know, 63,000, 60,000+ people perished to tuberculosis. And a lot of these people were in Waverly. So you can imagine the amount of deaths that you know were happening on a daily basis. Well, they had to have a way to dispose of the bodies. It was becoming a space issue, if you will. So they designed what was a body chute. Now, this was a tunnel, if you will, that had steps that you could walk up or down, depending on which way you're going, 500 feet underground to the very bottom of the hill. This tunnel was used, as I said, for people, you know, employees, because sometimes the snow, it was too much. They couldn't get up the hill, so they would go up through this tunnel. A lot of times, the same time the employees are coming up, they were taking and putting what looked like kind of a little, like, railroad cars. And they would lay one body on at a time, and they would send them down this chute, almost like on a little railroad type deal, these little tracks. And they would shoot the bodies down to the bottom, where there would be hearses. There may be family members down there to retrieve their loved ones' bodies. And a lot of times these were happening at the same time. You got employees coming up and bodies going down. This was labeled the death tunnel for obvious reasons. I mean, the tunnel was primarily used a lot in the construction of the place, to get supplies up even after construction, to get medical supplies up, especially in bad winters. But they would just put all their supplies on these carts, and boom, up it goes and into the hospital. So that's the death tunnel. Now, I have yet, and I'm gonna be honest, I have yet to see this movie, but it is on my list. One of the rooms, talking about the death tunnel, before they were shipped down there, it is said that there was a draining room. Now, what this room was when a patient died, they would do an autopsy. They would do whatever, you know, they had to do, probably more research oriented. I mean, I think they knew why they died. They weren't doing the autopsy to figure out how they died. I mean, it's pretty obvious. But it is said that they would take the patients after they were autopsied or whatnot, and they would hang them up in this room, and they would cut them from groin to sternum, and they would just let them just kind of bleed out. This is, again, portrayed in the movie Death Tunnel. And some say that didn't happen. One patient in a little documentary that I had checked out on Waverly Hills, they talked to a couple patients, a husband and wife, and he says, "Hey, you know, I never saw it. I don't know." He just basically said he couldn't, you know, he couldn't really reply to that because it was beyond his, you know, knowing. He had no idea if that was happening or not. Then there's the mystique and the mystery of room 502. Now, room 502 was not a patient room. It was kind of a washroom, a bathroom, some say a mop room, or something of that nature. Now, there was a... I'm just going to say this because this is talked about in this clip that I want to play, but a pregnant nurse... who had said that got pregnant by one of the doctors there out of wedlock, which was very much looked down upon in this particular region at that particular time. And some really horrible things happened. It is said that she hung herself. There's other stories saying that she was actually strung up by other people. So without further ado, I want to play this clip. This is the five horror stories. You could call them, I've lost my train of thought there. I can't think of the word I want. Rumors, legends, whatever you want to call it. Here's five of them concerning Waverly Hills Sanatorium.
By the beginning of the 20th century, 450 Americans were dying of tuberculosis every day, and the wetlands around the Ohio River were the perfect breeding ground for the bacteria that caused the disease. There was no known cure, and victims would just waste away as they succumbed to their fever, chest pain, and coughing up of blood, their lungs being eaten from the inside out. In Jefferson County, Kentucky, this so-called white plague was reaching epidemic proportions, and it was thought that the cool, clean air of the mountains, together with a healthy diet and lots of sunshine, could help to cure this sickness. So Waverly Hills Sanatorium was opened. The sanatorium was a huge five-story Gothic structure able to accommodate 500 patients. To restrict the spread of tuberculosis, everyone at Waverly was isolated from the outside world. Not just patients, but the doctors, nurses, and employees too. Waverly had its own water treatment facility, its own farm, two cinemas, a post office, and of course, its own mass graveyard for the many unclaimed bodies. On top of a hill and surrounded by woods, it was a calm, safe place to stay and be nursed. Here are five terrifying stories and facts that surround the Waverly Hills Sanatorium. Hit those lights, sit back, and enjoy. The Death Tunnel. Beneath Waverly, there is a 500 feet concrete tunnel that connects the basement of the hospital to the foot of the hill. On one side, the tunnel has stairs, and on the other, there was a motorized winch system that could be used to transport any supplies that were needed at the sanatorium. During the height of the epidemic, it's thought that one patient was dying every hour at Waverly Hills, so the staff were having to dispose of several bodies every day. They couldn't get the bodies out of there fast enough, and they were having to pile them up in the cold food storage room. It was soul-destroying for the patients to see so many dead bodies leaving the sanatorium, and it caused them to give up hope. It was decided that the most efficient way to get rid of the dead was to take them from the morgue, place them on carts, and send them down the tunnel by the winch system at night. Once at the bottom of the hill, the bodies were placed into a hearse and taken away, without any of the patients being aware of anything. For obvious reasons, the tunnel became known as the Body Chute, and many ghost hunters have reported seeing figures walking the tunnel and of hearing footsteps when no one else is there. I honestly can't imagine a more eerie atmosphere. Room 502. On the fifth floor, as well as two nurses' stations, a linen room, a medicine room, and a pantry, there is a room that was notorious. In 1928, Mary was the head nurse at Waverly. She became pregnant by one of the doctors, but he was already married and wanted nothing to do with Mary or his baby. Mary was dragged to the operating theatre, held down, and forced to have an abortion by the doctor and three other men. But something went wrong, and the men panicked. They dragged Mary, her clothes covered in blood, and hanged her outside room 502. It was the doctor and father of the baby that kicked out the chair from beneath her. The aborted baby was supposedly taken away and thrown down the body chute in the basement. It was then hidden in the coffin of one of the TB patients, who was subsequently sent home for burial. People who have entered this room often complained of nausea and stomach pains. Shapes were often seen near the window from outside, and lights have been seen to flicker on and off. Mary's ghost has also been seen near room 502, perhaps searching for a lost baby. Timmy. It was not only adults that caught tuberculosis. Many children also became victims of the disease too. A children's pavilion of 50 beds was built at Waverly to house them. The pavilion was not only for the sick children, but also for any children of patients who had no one else to look after them. The children's wing was on the fifth floor, and quite worryingly, it was right next to the mental ward, where patients with TB of the brain were kept. There was a play area on the roof of the building, with a set of swings where the children could play. Timmy was a healthy 10-year-old boy, and one of those unlucky children whose parents had both been admitted to Waverley with tuberculosis. Having no one else to care for him, there was no choice but for him to stay with his parents. Timmy loved to play ball with the nurses, and he would spend hours chasing his ball along the hospital corridors. While running after his ball on the roof one day, he fell the 5 floors to his death. It was thought that a prisoner was on the roof the same time as Timmy was killed and pushed Timmy to his death, but an investigation could not prove that the prisoner was responsible. Reports are rich that Timmy still likes to play ball, and sounds of the bouncing ball can be heard echoing along the floor in the corridors. Visitors to the now derelict building often bring toy balls with them so that they can play games with Timmy, and the balls are often seen rolling along the floor when no one is there. The treatments were brutal. Many painful procedures were performed on the patients at Waverley Hills. There was no anaesthetic available then, so these horrific procedures were carried out whilst the patients were awake. Doctors would remove some of the patient's ribs to open up the chest area and collapse the lung. Sometimes up to 8 ribs would need to be removed, as it was regarded too dangerous to remove no more than 3 ribs at a time. It could take several surgeries before the procedure was finally finished. Sometimes air or nitrogen was injected into the chest area, or a balloon was expanded inside the chest cavity until the lung collapsed. The gas had to be topped up every few weeks to keep the lung from inflating again. As a final last resort, a lobectomy operation would be performed. Parts of the infected lung would be cut away, and sometimes the whole lung would be removed. As you can imagine, only 5% of patients survived this procedure. Sometimes the TB bacteria would travel to the brain and affect the nervous system. This could cause patients to become mentally ill, and they would be taken to the electroshock therapy room for treatment. Electric current would be used to induce seizures and help to ease the patient's symptoms. With the onset of antibiotics, it was no longer necessary for Waverley to remain open, and in 1961, it closed its doors as a TB treatment facility. After a quarantine period, Waverley Hills was reopened in 1962 as Woodhaven Medical Services and was essentially a nursing home for the elderly, as well as the mentally ill. Bizarrely, many treatments like electric shock therapy and lobotomies were performed on the aging patients for unknown reasons. These patients were stripped, locked in their rooms, and often chained up for hours at a time. The facility was infested with cockroaches and other bugs, and the patients were left to lie in their own urine and feces. Woodhaven was closed in 1981 after investigations of abuse and neglect. The Creeper. It's that unshakable feeling that someone is watching you. You can see them out of the corner of your eye, but when you quickly turn to see them, they are gone. Many shadow people have been seen, both in Waverley itself and in the grounds. One of these shadow people that is claimed to haunt the hospital is a man who hates any visitors. His presence is foreshadowed with a feeling that all of the happiness has been sucked out of the world. Disturbingly, he has no face and crawls around on all fours, more like an animal than a man. He is usually seen scuttling along the walls and ceilings of the 4th floor. He runs down the corridors towards visitors, and then runs up the wall to approach upside down. He then hangs from the ceiling above his intended victim, growling. Demonic entities are said to be drawn to places that have a lot of paranormal activity, so it could be that the Creeper, as he is known, is feeding from the energy of the dead. One story tells how the Creeper first appeared in order to protect a child that was undergoing painful therapy. Visitors who have felt the presence of the Creeper are reported to have been so afraid that they have left the building immediately and never returned. The slamming of doors and unexplained footsteps have been heard when no one is there. The sounds of coughing and crying emanate from the walls. Hollow faces have been seen staring hopelessly out around corners and through the windows. Children are heard to sing nursery rhymes, and doctors in white coats seem to just walk through walls. It seems that all of the human suffering and death that has been experienced over the years has made Waverley Hills Sanatorium a hotspot for supernatural phenomenon. The infamous Waverley Hills Sanatorium still stands today, in Pleasure Ridge Park. It's now privately owned, and the more adventurous can book ghost tours there, as a consequence of all the pain and death suffered at Waverley. Is it any wonder that it's advertised as one of the most haunted locations on Earth? So that's 5 terrifying facts and horror stories surrounding the Waverley Hills Sanatorium, which has been voted the number 1 most haunted hospital in the United States.
If that doesn't get you pumped up to go to this place, I'm not sure what will. It gets me pumped up. I want to see this place. I want to experience these things that are being talked about here. It is very, very rich in history, again. And wow, I mean, the amount of deaths that happened there. And I have to correct myself. I mistakenly said that it was kind of like a... almost like a railway system, but it was a winch system that would pull these carts up and down the chute. And I wanted to talk, you know, briefly about, you know, some of the treatment. I've had a collapsed lung. I had my lung collapse, I guess, about 7 years ago, maybe about 8 years ago, and happened in my sleep. This is a very painful situation here. And they would literally go in and purposely, as you heard, collapse the lung to make that lung dormant, hoping that it could regenerate itself and heal itself from the disease. And as you heard, this procedure did not work out very well. It said that less than 5% of the people who went through that survived. So we're about here to the end. So I hope that I've instilled a little bit of intrigue. If you are like myself, like Mrs. Dreads, like Malice, like Dominic, and a lot of people, you know, that really dig this kind of stuff. And hey, you know, skeptic or not, just because you're skeptical doesn't mean you shouldn't go and, you know, experience a place like this that is steep in history, and, you know, for yourself. Figure it out for yourself, you know, and a lot of times, you know, people will go to these places, and as I mentioned with Hillview, when we went out there, we were pretty limited on the activity that we got. But I find it hard to, you know, I don't think you could just write it off and say, no, it's hype what they're saying here about Hillview, about wherever. Because I went there and spent the night all night and I didn't see shit. I didn't hear shit. Well, you know, a lot of times, you know, you may have to go and spend quite a bit of time in a place, go back. And yes, you know, these places, they it does cost money to, you know, spend the night in one of these places. But if you're as dedicated as I am, you will make that happen. I'm going to sign off tonight. I want to thank everyone for listening. And if you happen to go out and do some ghost hunting, hey, let me know. Let me know your experience. Did you find anything? Hey, I'm all for it. You can send me clips, video, audio, whatever. This is one of my little guilty pleasures, if not passions. And that's to go out and explore these haunted areas. So I am Otis B. Dreads. This is Night of the Living Dreads. Again, you can check this podcast out as well as all of our previous ones at nightoftheliveddreads.com. That's Dreads with no A. And of course, the quick rundown, Gorehounds of Horror on Facebook. Misfit Horror Fiend Club. That's right. Facebook as well. Check out After Dark. And if you need a laugh while you're baked, Cannabis Arcade. Cannabis with a K. Check them all out. Become members. You will not be disappointed. Well, again, I want to thank everyone for joining me here in the Insane Asylum. I'm about to put the straitjacket on, lock the padded cell, and have a good night. I want you to do the same. Have a good night, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Things no one knows. We're going to die.